the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, here we go again. Thanks for joining us. It is all about Bucket Strategy Investing, and the program continues. Decades and decades of this. It's the one show that gives you the strategies you need to help you get to and through retirement. We're helping you out here every day. That's the goal anyway. I'm Johnny Dean. This hour, we're going to talk a little bit about tax management in retirement. That's what we're going to get started off with. You know, a lot of advisors, a lot of media types, whatever you want to call them, they talk about the best ways to spend your money after you've hung it all up, right? Tell you about this. This is how you're going to spend it. But very few people talk about the tax implications of doing whatever it is you're doing. Taxes, they do matter. And of course, you should not allow the tax tail to wag the dog of retirement planning. You really don't want to ignore the tax aspect either. Because when you pay taxes, that's a cut in your income right there. It's like getting a lower rate of return, whatever. So we're going to talk about spending the brackets. We'll talk about blending the brackets and all that kind of stuff with Professor Rick Plum. I'll also have Steve Allendort, our loan financial planner. He's in here to talk about refinancing your current mortgage. You know, with rates as low as they are these days, is there some mathematical way to determine if or when it makes sense to do a refi? I think the answer might be yes. So we'll talk with that with Steve about that in just about 15 minutes or so. Now, you got a question for the Brain Trust? You give us a call right now. Our studio lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Plenty of room on the phones. Emails, we got them right here. You can get those to us at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll answer here on the program. Professor Rick Plum, our main Brain Trust advisor, he's here with me, courtesy of the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group who bring you this hour of the program. If you need a bucket strategy put together, one that fits your goals specifically, you can call the professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at that number, 800-644-1150. Preparing yourself for whatever might happen, yeah, that's one of the real keys to a successful retirement plan. You got to make sure you have a plan for whatever might happen down the line. And believe me, anything can happen. So once again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. You can talk off air to any one of the nationwide network of Brain Trust advisors. You can also talk to us here on the program. I would encourage you to do so, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. So let's get to it, Professor Plum, because we don't have a ton of time this hour. Managing your retirement tax bill. First of all, before we get into how retirement income is taxed, why are taxes, besides the obvious, you got to write a check or you got to have something taken out, why are taxes an issue in retirement?
Well, there's three basic components in creating a retirement strategy. One is how much money you've saved. One is how much your expenses are going to be. And the other is the rate of return that you can achieve on that amount of money. Once you're at retirement, the amount of money you have is the amount of money you have. You can't change that other than by inheriting it. So you've got to control the other two sides of it. How much can you earn and how much do you spend? Everything that you spend is, everything that's coming out of the portfolio is an expense. And the more expenses you have, obviously, the less likely your portfolio is to last. So one of the major expenses that a lot of people have, and they always forget about it, it's, okay, well, I need, you know, either rent or mortgage, I need car insurance, I need this, I need that, travel budget, all these things. Here's all my expenses. I went through my checking account and here's all my expenses. I know what my expenses are when I get ready to retire. They forgot about the taxes. And so they say, add up everything, the food, the entertainment, and all this. We need $5,000 a month to retire, $10,000. Pick whatever number it is that you want to use. And then they say, okay, I need that amount per month. So if I need $10,000 a month to retire, I need $120,000 a year. Oops. Where's the money going to come from? And how much do I have to then also set aside for taxes? So taxes are an issue because they are one of your fixed expenses. So being able to control the expenses. Now, we want to be able to have as much money left over for the fun expenses as we can. There are certain expenses that we just have to have, and controlling those. A mortgage, it'd be nice to have a low or no mortgage in retirement. That's an expense that we're trying to control before we get there or soon after we retire. All these other issues are expenses that we need to control. And taxes are one of the worst because, frankly, most people don't like paying taxes. I don't know if I've ever met anybody that actually likes paying it. It is one of those things that's a necessary evil for a lot of people. So how do you go about, A, determining how much you're going to pay in taxes, and B, controlling how much you're going to pay in taxes? Well, the first step in controlling them is to figure out how much they're going to be in the first place. Some people don't have much, if any, of a tax bill in retirement, depending upon where their income's coming from. Social Security, Roth IRAs, things of that nature. If that's all you have, then you may not have to worry about income taxes. But a lot of people, the majority of their money is in IRAs, 401ks, and other tax-deferred investments. Why? Because if it wasn't in those accounts, we would have spent it long ago when the kids were younger or whenever, you know, was happening, life happened while we were saving. Because that wall, that big wall between us and our IRAs allowed us to save the money and still have money left over when we get to retirement, whereas a lot of people have tended to spend the rest of the money because they just don't have the incentive to save it as much. So we end up with Social Security and an IRA, 401k rolled into an IRA, however you want to deal with it, a tax-deferred account. How much in taxes are you going to pay? Well, it becomes an issue. Where you have control is when you have other accounts. I mean, if all you have is your Social Security and an IRA, there's not a lot of tax management you can do other than reducing how much you take out of your IRA, and at some point it may be that the government mandates you take that money out and pay it anyway. The only way to have control and management over your taxes is to have different sources of income. Now, I'm not talking about account A, account B, and account C, and all of them underneath the IRA. That's one source of income, IRA. So you need personal money, Roth money, IRA money. But what if you only have IRA money? That's where maybe the conversion tactics come
now,
in.
Now, are we talking about somebody who's pre-retired, somebody who's in their 50s, 60s, somebody who's over 70 and a half has fewer choices, obviously?
I'm talking about everybody because before you get to retirement, you have more flexibility in what you do. When you get to retirement, it doesn't mean you don't have any flexibility. You just have less flexibility. And when you get out to required minimum distribution age, you have even less flexibility because you have a certain amount that you have to take out. So now we just have to look at what's going on in life. Which category are we in? Are we pre-retirement? What makes the most sense for us at that time? Are we at retirement but not at required minimum distribution age? That gives us one set of parameters. Now we're 70 and a half or older, we have required minimum distributions. How do we go about managing it? And so each different area of life has a different set of characteristics that we're looking for to determine whether it makes sense or not makes sense to do what we're doing. A lot of people, you know, want to do the conversions. I was just talking with somebody the other day. They're still working. They're in their 65-ish, spouse is a little bit older. They're waiting until 70 to take their Social Security, and they have a very good income right now, over $300,000.
Really?
And they're looking at, should we be doing Roth conversions right now? And then in retirement, they're going to have maybe $200,000 of income. Not a big difference in tax. There's going to be a little bit of difference tax. And they said one of the reasons they're looking towards doing conversions is to be able to pass on that Roth IRA, because they don't expect to spend it, to their kids and grandkids. But what is their tax bracket going to be?
That's the question, because if the parents or the owners are in a high tax bracket now and are going to be in one even after age 70 and a half or whatever, or 70.
Assuming we still have the stretch capability.
Well, let's just say that that's the case. We can't go on what ifs. If the kids are going to be in a much lower tax bracket, it would make sense to have
not
them
to convert.
Yeah, exactly. Inherit the IRA. That way, less tax is being paid on the. On
we
the,
know what mom and dad are going to pay on the money.
Yeah,
they're going to pay 28-33%, and depending upon the state they live in, they may pay some more. That we don't know what the kids are going to pay. We don't know how long mom and dad are going to live. We don't know if they're going to spend it all. But do we want to do conversions and then leave it to somebody who is in a potentially lower tax bracket? So all of these things come into play because managing your expenses in retirement, like I said, the portfolio is the portfolio. You're not going to necessarily save anymore because you're going to live off of it, which means you're going to be distributing it. If you're in a blessed situation where your pensions and Social Security are more than what you need anyway, then you're going to have a tax problem probably anyway. Everything you do is going to be, I guess that's a fourth category of people.
What's that?
People that have more pensions and social than they know what to do with, and they're still saving money out of that and building up other accounts.
Yeah, that's the tier I'd like to be in, and I don't know that I'm going to be there. But okay, all right. We'll add.
We have something to shoot for.
Sure, of course, yeah. And something to be disappointed that I didn't make by the time I reached the end, but hey, whatever.
So the first thing in understanding how to structure your taxes is understanding what your taxes are. What bracket are you in? What bracket might the money be in, or you be in when the money comes out of the IRA, either because of required minimum distributions, Roth conversions, or your heirs? You have to sit down and make a judgment of, okay, what is happening? where is my income coming from? A lot of people, you know, they say, okay, I want to be in that $100,000 a year range, married couple. $100,000 is in the 25% income tax bracket. That means I need to gross it up to like $133,000 so I can pay 25% of it and still have $100,000 left over to pay taxes on, you know, after I've paid the taxes. Well, that's not the way to look at it either, because you're not just in a 25% tax bracket. You're in a zero for some of the money, a 10% bracket for some of the money, a 15% bracket for a lot of the money, and the 25% bracket for a little of the money. So do you have to take out 133 to net 100? No, you probably have to take out about 115, 118. But those are the things you need to do to control what you're going to do in retirement, hopefully before you get to retirement.
Yeah, and that's what a good financial advisor should be thinking about the entire time that they're talking to you about your portfolio. We're going to talk more about this. Terry in Phoenix, hold on. I got Steve Allador joining us after the break talking about your loans, your refis. We'll also bring Professor Plum back after the bottom of the hour. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We brought back Steppenwolf this week, and that means we brought back Steve Allador, our loan financial planner. Steve is here from Rancho Financial, and he's here talking to us about strategies with regard to mortgages and today refinances. You can reach Steve off the air at his phone number, 888-563-1070, or at loan, L-O-A-N, financialplanner.com. Steve, thanks for being on again with us. Rates, let's start with them. It seems like they just haven't moved
up. Well, yeah, I want to focus on that because interest rates right now are lower than they've been in the last 3 to 4 months. You're looking at a 30-year fixed rate, both conforming and jumbo, as low as 3.6. Rates can be higher based on your scenario, purchase, refinance, cash out,
right,
loan
true.
To value. 15-year loans you can get with minimal points below 3%. The 7-year loan is where we've really seen the dip over the last couple of months. It was low for a long period of time. Then when the Feds made their move, the market kind of jittered a little bit. I saw the 7 years in the mid to high threes.
Okay.
Now I'm seeing back around 3%.
From mid to high threes down to like a flat
3%. There's been a big movement in that 7-year loan. And whether you're doing a conforming loan or a jumbo loan, 3% is the current rate on that particular product.
And this one is where it's fixed for 7 years. After that, it becomes an adjustment.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct.
So if you're only going to be in your home for maybe 6-7 years and you don't feel like you're, and you think maybe 7 years from now interest rates will be a lot higher, this could be a good way to go.
Yeah. And if you look at your history, you know, except for this period that we've had over the last 7 or 8 years where people couldn't refinance because they didn't have value in their property.
Yeah.
I've been doing this 23, 24 years. Very rarely, every once in a while, but very rarely do I see a borrower that's had a mortgage more than 7 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they'll either refi or they move or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Okay, so speaking of refinancing, this is always a trick. When does it make sense to refinance? And I mentioned this at the top of the hour. Is there some kind of mathematical, I think you had said once that in the old days, if there was a 2%, there had to be at least like a 2% change in rates.
Well, let's go back 20 years. Let's go back to when, you know, my hair was dark and not completely gray.
Sure, sure.
You know, back then when I got in the business, you know, mortgages were $100,000, $140,000. And interest rates and doing refinances generally cost 2 points to do. So you needed that 2-point difference in order for it to make sense to refinance. Nowadays, if you've got a loan amount between $100,000, $200,000, you're looking at maybe needing 3/4 to a full point difference in interest rate. But the higher the mortgage you have, the less difference in interest rate that you need. $300,000 loan, $400,000 loan, you only may need a 0.5 point. But how then do you determine, does it make sense to refinance? And we've talked about this a number of times. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I came up with a formula. It was real simple so that people could visually see that, aha, this makes sense. So here's what we have. You have your total payment, principal and interest. That payment's broken down into a portion of the payment going to principal, reducing your balance, and the other portion being the interest that you're paying on a monthly basis. That's your true cost of your money. My formula is that if we can get you a return on your money or a payback within 2 years or less, that's when it makes sense to look at refinancing. So what is that payback? Let's assume that you have a your current mortgage payment, you're paying $1,150 a month in interest. Loan cost, let's say, is $3,500. But now the amount of interest that you're going to be paying on your new loan is only $1,000. So we're saving you $150 a month in interest. You divide that by your loan cost, and that gives you the simple calculation of your payback. In that scenario, it would be 24 months.
So sure, if and what you're talking about is payback because you have the fees or whatever it is that happen to be built inside the loan.
Correct.
Doesn't make sense to do it if you're going to lose money on the thing, even if you happen to be paying a lower interest rate.
Yeah, you know, again, there are two reasons that people refinance. One is they need or want to lower their payment. If they want to lower their payment, they don't really necessarily have to refinance. The key is, does it make sense? Am I getting the return on the money that makes sense? And that's where this calculation really will hit home for a borrower, because they can visually see the payback period.
What now? You're only going to be in your home for a couple, 3 years, longer.
Yeah. Then what we may want to look at is, can we do a no-cost loan and get that payback period down to either 0 months or 3 or 4 months? So you may not need as big of a change in interest rate. We may drop your interest rate 0.375, but if it doesn't cost you anything, then you get a payback that's immediate, and then it absolutely makes sense.
I've had this question too. How is it that a loan can cost nothing? I mean, somebody's got to get paid for doing something, right?
Well, right. But lenders give us ranges of interest rates
and
that we can work with
them.
So let's say, for instance, you qualified at a 3.6, 30-year fixed at 0 points. Mm-hmm. One-time fees might be $3,500. But at 4%, I may get what's called a rebate from the lender of a point and a half that I can then help to pay for the closing costs. So there, you get a little bit higher interest rate, but if it doesn't cost you any money and you're getting a return right away, I hate to use this phrase, but it becomes a no-brainer.
Actually, it does in that particular instance. Okay, now, you might have some people that have low-rate adjustable, right? But it becomes amortized, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years in some cases, whatever it is.
Does it make sense to move forward and do something?
Yes, so you're paying a little bit higher now than you were before. Should you move out of it?
So let's say that your current loan is at 3% or 3.1 on an adjustable. It was an interest-only loan. You had it for 10 years. Your payment's just gone up $300 to $400. Should you refinance? If you can make the payment, you might want to keep the loan.
You mean make the higher payment? Because obviously it's higher if it's fully amortized.
Correct. But is it worth to go from, let's say, 3 or 3.1 on an adjustable to maybe 3.6 on a fixed rate? Your payment will definitely be lower because it's amortized for 30 years. Mm-hmm. If it allows you to sleep better at night, thinking that, well, my adjustable that's at 3.1 will eventually get up to that 3.6 or 3.7. Those are some of the things that will be important, and specifically to each individual, for us then to determine, does it make sense to refinance? My job is to point all of this out so a borrower says, okay, here's what can happen here, here's what can happen here, here's what's most comfortable for me. Then we can both come to the right decision of, does it make sense to move forward?
So you move you put the emotional factor into this.
That
does come into it. Last thing, because we only got less than a minute. You got credit card debt. Does it make sense when you're doing this to combine that into part of your mortgage?
Well, it certainly can. A lot of people say, well, why do I take credit card debt or car loans and put it in a mortgage for 30 years when I may have it paid off in 5 or 10? The key is if we're getting you a significantly lower interest rate, if you can continue making the same payments you're making right now on your mortgage and your credit debt into the new mortgage, because the new mortgage payment, when you combine those together, mm-hmm. the payment will be significantly less. But if you continue making that same payment, paying an extra $700, which is what you're paying on your credit card debt.
You're used to paying it now. It's in your budget.
You're going to eliminate that credit card debt and or that car loan significantly quicker through the mortgage. And after that 5 or 6 year period of time, you can decide to go back down on a lower payment, or keep on accelerating the pay down of your mortgage. So it's all about planning.
Right, and it's discipline too. You got to continue
well.
To do that.
You got it.
That's right. Steve, thanks very much for joining us. If you want to talk to Steve personally about any mortgage issues you're having, you can call him at 888-563-1070. That's his office number. Or reach him online at loan, L-O-A-N, loanfinancialplanner.com. We will see you again next week.
I'll be here, my friend.
Thank you, Steve Alador. Johnny Dean, Professor Plum rejoins me. We'll be taking more of your calls, talking taxes and whatever else with you on Bucket Strategy Investing. Got a hankering for ribs now with barbecue sauce. I don't know why. Just all of a sudden getting real hungry. A little Kansas City barbecue. 877 Planner. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Tommy, and the Shondells. I still don't know what a Shondell is, but we'll work on that. We're here answering your money questions. 877 Planner, our number. Get your calls in 1 second. Want to remind you that not just here do you get advice. No. Of course, you get advice in person. I'm talking money, strategy, in retirement income strategies. We're going to be talking to you about those in a few different cities. Now, the next one is coming up quick, right quick. That'll be in Las Vegas on Saturday morning, February 20th. Saturday morning, February 20th, the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies in-person workshops with the Brain Trust. Professor Plum will be there. Terry Keyes will be there. The local Brain Trust advisors will be there. You need to be there as well. Ask your money questions. Get a lot of questions answered and learn all about retirement income strategies. The big question for retirees, how do I keep my income coming for the rest of my life? So that'll be Las Vegas on the 20th. Seattle, Washington happens Saturday, February 27th. And then in March, Saturday the 12th, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Seattle, Phoenix, the next three. How do you sign up? Easy. You go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Hello. Sign up there. It's all free. Wealthed, W-E-A-L-T-H. We would love to see you there. There will be more cities following that. Just check wealthed.com if you're wondering when. All right. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Got some more to say on tax brackets. We have a couple of calls asking us about that. So let's move along next to Terry in Phoenix. Hello, Terry.
Well, how you doing?
Good. How are you today?
I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
You saved me a lot of money over the years. My question is a tax bracket, 15% at $75,300. Mm-hmm. I have dividends and sale stocks occasionally.
Okay.
And is that deductible or non-deductible, and how does it affect my taxes?
Well, the sale of a capital asset, a stock, either creates a gain or a loss. And so if it's a gain, that's obviously going to be a taxable event depending upon where you are on the tax brackets. If it's a loss, you can use some or all of that loss to offset other incomes. You can't go past $3,000, but if you sell something and you lost 50 grand, you can't write off $50,000 of other income. You can use the losses to offset gains from other areas, and then another $3,000 to offset ordinary income, wages, pensions, interest, dividends, and things like that. But so there is a cap on how much of a loss you can take on your return. But now the question is, how much of the gain, assuming it was a long-term capital gain, how is that going to be taxed? Well, that depends on where it falls in the tax brackets. You mentioned 75,300. That is the top of the 15% tax bracket for a married couple filing a joint return. But that's also after all deductions and exemptions that that couple may have. So it's not the gross income. They may have $100,000 of gross income, including the gain. And they've got their itemized deductions or their standard deduction. They've got their personal exemptions. And that brings it down quite a bit before they apply the tax brackets to it. So we have to understand where the money's coming. Also, if that $100,000 is coming from $40,000, $50,000 of Social Security, not all of that Social Security will be taxable. At worst case, 85% of it is, but it's a sliding scale. And so we first have to determine all these other factors to determine how much actual taxable income we have. Now, if we have more taxable income than that $75,300, and all of that excess is because of the capital gain, Well, we have to look at what the tax bracket on that capital gain or qualified dividend is, because we look at where it is. If I have exactly, call it $70,000 of income from all sources, not including capital gains and qualified dividends, and then I sell something and I create a big capital gain, that was $70,000 of taxable income, now I've got a $30,000 capital gain. Well, in that example, $75,300 is the max of the 15% bracket. How much room do I have in the 15% bracket? Well, in my case, I had $5,300. I had $70,000 of taxable income before. That first little bit of capital gain, long-term, will be 0% tax bracket. The rest of it, because it wouldn't have been in the 15, this is the hardest thing for people to understand.
Well, I'm going to ask you, are you following this, Terry? Because, yeah.
Well, yes.
Okay, good.
The rest of it would be at the 15% long-term capital gain. Now, if I had a very, very large capital gain and it put me well over $400,000+ of taxable income, now my capital gain is going to be in the excess capital gain over the threshold for the 39.6 is at a 20% capital gain bracket. But there's also other factors involved. So tell me a little bit about what you are doing, where your income's coming from, and what you're worried about.
Well, we're coming up on 71.5, and I have to move stock from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And so I have an account I'm going to start moving. And right now, I have been able to keep us in the $33,000, so we don't pay on a Social Security. Mm-hmm. But I know in 2 years, we've got to start pulling out $20,000 a year.
Now, you said you were 71.5 this year?
I'm 68.
Okay.
My wife's 60. We'll be 69, so that gives us 2 years to move this stuff.
Is the IRA in your name or her name or both?
My name, and she has her own.
So she's going to have a required minimum distribution probably before you do.
1 year.
And so you would focus on the conversions on her side. And so there is, like I mentioned earlier, there's a sliding scale on that Social Security area. And where you go over what they have, what they call a MAGI, Modified Adjusted Gross Income. And that's a calculation where you look at pretty much all the income on the tax return that's in the taxable column, plus any tax-free income that you might have from municipal bonds. And then you include half of the Social Security that was paid to you for the year. And then that's just a reference number. That's your MAGI, Modified Adjusted Gross Income. As long as that's under $32,000, none of the Social Security is taxable. But once you go over $32,000, then they start piling Social Security into the tax column. Now, the first $6,000-$8,000 that you put over there isn't taxed super heavily, but it is taxed. Once you get past maybe $8,000-$9,000 of extra income over that MAGI, now you start paying some significant tax. And in many cases, it depends on the size of your IRA. But it may mean that you just want to blow through and pay taxes on your Social Security and go all the way up to the top of the 15% bracket, you know, up to 75.3 of taxable income. Because at some point, depending upon how much your Social Security is, you may have already maxed out the Social Security tax. How much Social Security do you and your wife have combined between the two of you?
Oh,
roughly.
Probably $30,000.
Okay, so it'll take a little while. How large are your IRAs combined between the two of you?
Oh, they're in the hundreds. Probably 400, okay. 500.
So your required minimum distribution is going to be $15,000 to $18,000, going forward, starting in a couple of years. So the idea would be to take a look at what is that required minimum distribution going to do to you, without doing anything else, and can you is it in a situation where we can manage it without hurting ourselves? Because if it costs more to do the conversions than the RMD is going to hurt us, just deal with the RMDs. But if we can figure out a way to maybe lessen the blow either now or in the future because of these Roth conversions and give ourselves some flexibility, then it makes some sense to do it.
Well, I was just going to max out the 15%.
Okay.
And add, I understand because we're over 67, we have a 23.9 normal deduction the government gives us.
Right. You go up a little bit on your standard deduction when you're 65 and older.
And the account that I want to switch over is has a yield of about 6% now that the stock market came down.
Okay, so you're going to just do a swap of that stock from your traditional IRA to the Roth IRA.
Yeah, that should bring in about $6,000-$7,000 tax free. Because see, I listened to you guys over the years.
Good.
In 2011, I put in $1,000 in a Roth account for myself and for one for my wife.
You got that 5-year clock started ticking, did you?
5 years. That's great.
So assuming that I can, as soon as I put it in the Roth, it's part of the clicking.
Oh, yeah, it's all done.
We're finished as January. We got the 5 years in.
Yeah, then it's not 5 years as the months go. It's 5 tax years. You did in 2011, so you have 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. You're already good to go.
Yep.
I'm ready. Okay, so is it worth switching over?
The conversion probably makes a lot of sense. But because you've got that required, and it depends on how much you need to live and other things, whether you take the distribution from the Roth IRA to help you live, or you take the distribution from the IRA to help you live and let the Roth grow, that's up to you. But I like the conversion idea as long as it's not hurting ourselves in the long run.
Well, we don't need the money.
Oh, you're not going to take the distribution then. So.
Well, I was just going to use it for taxes.
Yeah, I guess you could do it that way. I mean, so he's going to use the distribution from the Roth IRA to pay the taxes on the conversion.
Yeah.
You might as well just take it out of the IRA as long as you don't go over the 15%. It's coming out of it. It's either lessening what you put into the Roth or it's taking money out of the Roth. Either way, it's the same number.
Terry, I got to take a break. If you have some more questions, hold on. I can have Professor Plum talk to you more about this off the air. You asked some really good questions, and it's food for thought, I would tell you that. This is what strategy that we're talking about. We'll talk more about that. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're coming right back. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Standing by to take your calls. 877-752-6637. Also emails, we get to those at wealthed.com. Stand by for a few more. But we do take calls first in this program, and that's what we're going to do. I also want to continue this discussion, if not this hour, then maybe in another hour, about how retirement income is taxed. We really didn't get into that necessarily. We were talking about some of the strategies with our last caller, Terry, in Phoenix. How retirement income is taxed. We may get to that next hour. All right, back to the phone lines. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Actually, let's do this now, since I mentioned it. All right, hang on if you're on hold for just a second. The question of how retirement income is taxed. First of all, you have some accounts, Professor Plum, that are tax deferred. You got some that are in Roths. Different tax treatment for different accounts, right?
Well, yes. I mean, IRAs, annuities, 401ks, any qualified retirement plan, they're all tax deferred. You don't pay taxes on anything that's happening, for the most part, inside the IRA or 401k or annuity. But then when you start taking money out of the accounts, it'll be taxable then. How is it taxed? As high as the IRS can figure out how to tax you. It's ordinary income. It's just the regular old tax treatment. There's no preferential tax on that particular area. Interest. Same thing. It's just income that's being earned. Your pension income. It's all ordinary income. If you have passive income from real estate and other areas, that's all ordinary income. And that's where when we talk about the 15, the 25, the 33 brackets, 28 bracket, they're being taxed in those successive brackets as much as the IRS can push you that way. Now, there's also other incomes. Municipal bond interest, tax-free. Qualified dividends. There's two types of dividends. Ordinary dividends, ordinary income. Qualified dividends give you a lower tax treatment. How much lower? Depends on where the tax brackets are. Long-term capital gains. That's different than short-term capital gains. How long did you hold the asset before you sold it? Less, a year or less? Short-term. More than a year? Long-term. Long-term capital gains are taxed at a lower bracket than they would have otherwise been taxed if it had been ordinary income. Now, the hard part comes down to Social Security. How much, if any, of your Social Security is going to be taxable? Well, that depends on all the other types of income I just mentioned. Capital gains, qualified dividends, ordinary income, tax-free municipal bond interest, all of that income combined, plus half your Social Security, dictate how much, if any, of your overall Social Security benefit that was paid to you for the year will be actually taxable. And so it's all a matter of trying to figure out what's going on. When it comes to the Social Security taxation, it doesn't matter where the income came from, whether it was capital gain that actually could have a 0% tax bracket, or it's not that it's not taxable, because it is part of your overall taxable income. It is part of your adjusted gross income for determining all these other areas, like the net investment income tax, the tax on Medicare, or the additional premiums on Medicare. It is still part of your taxable income. It's just that the tax bracket for many people on long-term capital gains and qualified dividends is zero. Other people is 15, some people is 20, the people that make a lot of money.
Yeah, so I would say.
Understanding where the income's coming from can have a lot to do with how much you pay in taxes. We see this quite often where somebody may have a lot of interest and a lot of ordinary dividends in their accounts, and then they're thinking about what's going to happen when the required minimum distribution hits down the line. Well, what they could potentially have done, or can do if they have time, is change the way they're investing their portfolio. That means that they have a lot of bonds in their personal account, and maybe they have a lot of stocks in their growth in their IRAs. Flip them around. Have that interest that's being taxed anyway be inside the IRA and come out and be taxed anyway, but when it's coming out of the IRA, at least then it helps you qualify it for the required minimum distribution so that you don't have interest from your personal account and a distribution from your IRA stacking on top of each other and adding to all these other problems. Have the interest satisfy the required minimum distribution.
A lot of this goes toward asset location, which we've talked about. All right, I want to take at least one more call before the top of the hour. More on that topic coming up. Randy is next up, though, in Dallas, Texas, with a question or two. Hi, Randy. I think.
Randy?
I'm hearing something there. All right, well, hold on a second. I was trying to squeeze one more in here before the top of the hour.
Yes, you were.
He was going to talk about real estate and I think some type of whole life policy, but... Well, okay, so since I don't have time to, if you're on hold, hang on a second. I don't know if it's our phones or whatever that we're having issues with, but hold on a second. We'll see if we can talk to you during the top of the hour. All right, so the strategy that you mentioned, it sort of goes in line with asset location, does it not?
It goes well in line with asset location. Where you hold your assets, now this assumes you have different types of accounts. Where you invest your money, personal, Roth, tax deferred, has an impact on what you will ultimately pay in taxes. And maybe not just what you will ultimately pay in taxes, but your surviving spouse and or your heirs will ultimately pay in taxes. Once we get to retirement, where prior to retirement, we're focused on growth and we're focused on trying to build as much, and usually we're trying to build as much in our IRAs as possible and also build in our personal accounts. Once we get to retirement, in many cases, we have an allocation that requires something then in assets that create ordinary income and hopefully some growth left over there. In many cases, it makes more sense to have the growth in our personal account rather than our IRAs. In fact, you don't necessarily want the IRA to grow. If you're going to have growth in your portfolio, it'd be nice to have the growth in your personal account, not your IRA. And as I mentioned before, if you're going to have an asset that's creating ordinary income, you might as well have it in your IRA instead of your personal account, because that way it can help satisfy the required minimum distribution without doubling up, having taxable income from the asset and having a required minimum distribution from the IRA, because they're two different areas. So you, looking at it helps you understand, is there something I can do to get the same income, to basically have the same allocation I have now, if that's appropriate allocation, but maybe lessen the impact, the loss of my overall income to taxation. Frankly, I think it's just a loss of income to taxation. It doesn't help you live your life all that much. I mean, obviously in the greater scheme of things it does, they say. So, but looking at how to manage your expenses, your retirement, taxes hurt.
Sure, they hurt. It's a pay cut you're taking, or it's like getting a lesser rate of return. I mean, that's an extra bill that you probably didn't count on paying.
And for a lot of people, when they retire and they're less than $100,000 of income, when they start taking their required minimum distribution, they have a big shock because they know they're in the 15% income tax bracket, but that $10,000 required minimum distribution changed their federal income tax bill by almost $3,000. How can that be?
Well, we know how, and when their Social Security is added in,
that's where it comes
why.
From.
We'll talk more about this. I'll tell you what, Randy, hold on a second. We're going to get to your call. Don't go away. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you can talk to Professor Rick Plummer, any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group across the country, at their phone number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. More of your calls coming right up.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.